So we got episode 25 here of Rec Radio. Full with technical difficulties because OSF has been kicked off the show.
Can you hear me?
Just kidding. He's on a flight today. But we got Mando with the broken, real subtle, low audio. We have Ox Fubar today. Mando, why don't you talk about Rollbit, our sponsor, real quick, and then we'll get into it.
Yeah, so Rollbit is one of the most well-known crypto casinos out there. They've been the sponsor of this show for the last, 20-ish episodes. They, on the platform, you can do a range of different things. You can trade NFTs. They have an NFT marketplace as well as their own NFT collection called Rollbots, where you share a percentage of the rake from different betting on the platform. You have crypto futures, which we both trade on. You can get up to 1,000x leverage on a number of different things. You can bet on normal casino games, and you have a sports book as well where you can do sports bets. They have been, they've been sponsoring the show for the last however many episodes it's been. We've given out nearly $100,000 in prizes to live listeners, so make sure you tune in to the end where we do the loot box spins. We also have free codes for listeners. The first one is FOO, F-O-O, 1337 bar. FOO, 1337 bar. And then the second code is PUNK 8912.
Boom, there we go. What are we going to do about the loot box spin since OSF isn't here?
I don't know. As per usual, it's a disaster, but we could just do it the old way with the Twitter picker. We just have a random number generator and have people request, because I don't think Ovi was meant to set it up and he's obviously not with us last minute.
Yeah, I guess we'll figure it out. We don't have video today because Fubar is staying anonymous and I am at a mobile base today. But what is new this week? What's new in the markets? Have you been trading? I mean, I feel like we haven't moved in forever, but it also feels like we have moved.
Yeah, we moved quite a lot, right?
A weird phenomenon.
We went down, came back up, and now we just see what's about to happen. I don't know. I'm kind of in your camp that I feel as though this feels like the sort of thing where it could fall out of bed in just one headline around those debt ceiling negotiations, and then that kind of spirals things. It looks like today things are looking a little bit better, but I'm kind of in your camp that just because of how the technical setup is, one bad headline means we can really puke. But I'm still long term bullish. Still like the market, still dancing around in my chip coins. And what about you?
Yeah, I mean, same thing. Feels like you need a catalyst to push it down. I don't know. There's like no selling. There's no buying. It's kind of just low volume bullshit trap. Terrible conditions to trade. But I mean, I've been trying to short it. It's kind of impossible. I'm flat right now. There was a little drop today, but I don't know, man. It's tough. I think it's kind of like a walk away, sell in May, go away. It might be like the whole summer where it's just like no volatility. I think like the S&P hasn't moved 1% in 6 weeks. So that's a reflection of what's going on. It's kind of like it's trying to take everyone's money by FOMOing them into shorts, FOMOing them into longs. And it's kind of sit out. It's sit out time, right?
Do you think this debt ceiling thing is going to be resolved or not?
I think it always is, right?
It always is, but like it always gets really hairy towards the end.
It always will be, yeah.
It feels as though they've already decided it's going to be okay, but that just presents you with the idea that, you know, tonight someone comes out and says, oh, we're far from being done. Everything just completely dumps.
Yeah, it's all just posturing. I mean, I don't know. I'm not worried about it. What was the last time like the market moved on this? It was like 2011. Went down, like went right back up. I don't know. I don't think that's going to be a big catalyst.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
So today we have Fubar, right? Where's he at? I don't know.
I mean, he said he'd be 1 minute late. Let me just double check where he is. You around? What about sports bets? I see you've been doing quite a lot recently.
I mean, I'm gonna be doing them a lot less after yesterday. I don't know if you saw the post. I mean,
I saw the post, but I can barely follow sports bets. It's not my world. What did you do?
Yeah, baseball has new rules this year, and I mean, you would assume the bookies have like adjusted to the new rules. I mean, they definitely have, but every game seems to go over, and I only really bet unders. It hasn't been going well now.
Lost so giving it all back on the sports book.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's not a good hobby, to be honest. I think I'm done. We're done.
All right, I think we have Fubon now. Let me bring him up. I don't think he even picked NFTs for the loot box. I tried to get him involved in like $1 million NFTs, and he just didn't want to know. Just ignored the DM. So I think they're our own pick this week. How you doing, Fubon?
There's still good shit in there, so we're good.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. How you doing, Fubon?
Hey,
you hear us?
How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. We're just vibing, talking about getting wrecked on meme coins and the general market.
Hey, better meme coins than betting the over on baseball.
Yeah, exactly.
No, betting the over would have went well. Betting the under is the issue, it appears.
Did you get involved in any of the recent shitcoin season? Are you a big holder of Ben coin by any chance?
if I was, I think I'd be ashamed to tell you.
That's no, a good answer. See, so yeah, you definitely did. You just got involved in the PsyOps token because you got FOMO.
It feels like there's this massive, you can either be slinging money or building stuff, and feels like I rapidly oscillate between the two.
Now, oh, that's good to hear. So you do have a little bit of degen in you.
But very, very tempting. Just buy the right frog coin and set for life. So just let me know next time.
Yeah, it is. It is like that. It's like you bought the wrong animal JPEG in 2021, and this year it's going to be wrong frog coin.
Yeah, you bought the horse instead of the monkey. Poverty.
So maybe we should get into that a little bit more, just to give everyone a bit of a background of yourself. I know you're an Anon, but maybe some background in what you are building, and then we can maybe get into what you're degenning as well. But I know you've been around for a minute, at least in the NFT space and in the broader crypto space. So yeah, maybe how you first got involved and your journey to now.
Yeah, been involved in crypto for several years. Prior to that, studied math, went into AI research first thing. So building ChatGPT before it was cool or useful. did that for a couple of years, got hooked on open source, realized crypto was greatest place for individual leverage ever. One pseudo Anon can ship code and it'll run forever. No more managing Docker or Kubernetes or random cloud infrastructure. So that was the initial pull to me of, I can deploy the smart contract and it won't ever go down. Nobody will ever call me for a cron job. And that, yeah, grew. Did a lot of DeFi consulting work. That pulled me into the NFT space and realized just how much opportunity there is. I mean, people are chomping at the bit to use stuff. We just don't have that many apps yet. So yeah, it's been a fun ride. I enjoy being able to touch all the aspects of the space. That's what I bring to the table more than most, is I've played around in DeFi, I've played around in NFTs, was an MEV searcher for a bit. Enjoy the Twitter banter. So it's fun to bring them all together and see connections across different verticals.
And yeah, maybe the flip.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say the flip side of that. Like, you've seen all the building. Where do you think is the most LARPing taking place? Like, what do you think is the biggest scams in the space? And like, where you just like, this does not make any sense.
where to even begin? Well, I'd say that I am super bullish long term on the combo of machine learning and crypto. Everything you've got today is just a complete joke. So excited to build stuff in that arena, but probably 2-3 years down the road. You've got, I guess the question is, where do people promise to deliver things and not actually do it? It's interesting because NFTs obviously aren't super sophisticated aside from a select few, but they're also not promising much. So I can't call that like you get what you paid for in a way. And then DeFi, a lot of times it does what it promises, but nobody actually uses it. So nobody cares on that front. So Yeah, I don't know.
I know you're just a big racer of like different chains as well. So I don't know, like, if you believe in any of these other chains are going to make it other than Ethereum.
I think we need more L1s. How's that for a controversial statement? I think
Wow, I wasn't expecting that from you.
we need 10 times as many L1s. But the reason why might surprise you. It's because people keep bidding them up to $1 billion each. And that means there's this gigantic supply-demand imbalance. Maybe not to use them even, but just to own a piece of base infra. And so I'd love to see more experimentation. Like they're most will probably fail, but most of everything fails. I mean, 99% goes to zero, and the only way you get better is by trying new stuff and seeing if it works. And if it does, then copy it and tweak it. And if it doesn't, then I mean, tweak it some more. So I just love to see more experimentation. Tech innovation is the only piece that's up only, and so we need more of that. I mean, it's great to argue about which EIPs should go into Ethereum's upgrade 18 months from now, but it's harder to have leverage and demonstrate impact there. And something is mostly ossified. I mean, Ethereum's not quite as ossified as Bitcoin yet, but it is far more ossified than like Canto or Barrachain or Sui, say Solana even. So I'd love to see more competition, but also for prices to come down, which is the end result of that.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to step in and say you're one of my favorite accounts. You're hilarious as fuck. And you toe the line between like giga genius and writing hilarious, like, I don't know. I don't know how to explain, but either way, one of the best accounts on Twitter. Everyone should follow him.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Tying in with this, like, what about the shit they're doing with the Bitcoin? We just had Udi on who touted ordinals nonstop. I mean, I really can't get behind it. I don't know. I don't really see it. The fees, the transaction costs, paying for the blocks and like competing for block space. What do you think about like Bitcoin doing the BRC20 and all that shit? Do you think that has any like longevity at all?
Well, I'm going to an ordinals party tonight, so someone please send me an ordinal beforehand so I don't get ostracized.
Oh, you better watch
Where
yourself.
do ordinals parties happen?
I don't know. I think on Bitcoin.
Right, nice. It's a
But
cool party.
so it's
it's
expensive and
it's
takes really long to get there, or.
yeah, it takes like 10 minutes to get there. $8 entrance fee. Nobody, yeah, you're not compatible with anybody. All right. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting initiative because it is pushing the limits of what Bitcoin is capable of. And this is both good and bad. I mean, it's good because you're seeing for a while the Bitcoin culture was the only thing that's possible is Lightning Network. Lightning Network is going to save the Africans from poverty. Lightning Network, and that wasn't actually true. You could do more interesting things. And now we're starting to see Bitcoin as data availability layer to draw a term from Ethereum, where it doesn't actually do the computation. It's just a very expensive file coin in a way. That's not going to get long-term reorged, has all eyes on it. And ordinals were the first, I don't know, Bitcoin's had several waves of NFTs. The first things were colored coins, back in 2013, 14 era. And then you had the counterparty marketplace rare Pepes, that I'm kind of mad that people aren't bidding up because I got sucked into those. And now you're seeing ordinals. Ordinals are probably the best way to actually push data on chain. I mean, it's meant Taproot is meant for data compression, and so that's nice. But then people move from images. Like, what if I put my Bored Ape on Bitcoin and burned it on Ethereum? And now they're just uploading JSON blobs. A JSON blob is just text. It says like amount equals 20, name equals this, symbol equals this, using the same format as the images and then trading them around. But the interesting thing is that they're NFTs pretending to be fungible tokens, kind of like Bitcoin is an NFT pretending to be a fungible token. So it's, you can't, if you go to buy a BRC20, it's not like you go on Uniswap and say, all right, give me 50 of this, or I'm going to pay like one BTC worth of this. You can go on, you have to buy them in discrete, distinct chunks. So you can say like there are 10 coins listed for $10, or there are 50 coins listed for $30, and you have to buy up the individual chunks. And the indexing and everything also happens off chain. So you have competing questions about like, what if there's an indexer bug? So it's really cool. People are doing, the main question for me is people, because there's no base programmability, people just keep inventing new standards, and none of the standards are compatible with each other. So like, what's the moat for Ordinals to be the dominant standard over some other standard? ERC20 has taken over on Ethereum, for example, but that's because of the cross compatibility. So I'm just curious where the composability, like I've got an Ordinals NFT and I've got a Rare Pepe NFT, and can these be somehow joined together into apps? And I haven't seen that yet.
And so do you think like this kind of thing makes the number go up? Like, what do you comp Bitcoin to? Is it like digital gold? Is it a store of value? Is it a risk asset that can be like a leveraged S&P? Like, how do you think about Bitcoin in that sense? And I guess like, it'd be great to hear your thoughts on Ethereum in that sense too, because I think you're much more bullish on ETH as mm-hmm. we've seen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. What is like the seven Indian men and the elephant, each, or seven blind men and the elephant, each touching a different part. I don't know. When it comes to price, I focus almost wholly on flows, just who's buying and why, and who's selling and why. And that's the only thing that makes the price go up or down. And so it seems like the digital gold thesis has legs, or thesis or narrative. Is there really a difference? It seems like that has legs. There is a real, talking to friends who manage traditional or crossover or crossover friends, there are people who are freaked out by the bank collapse and legitimately buying Bitcoin for the first time as a result on that front. How large those flows are, and whether it dominates, like U.S. government stole $1 billion from Cheetos tin of James Zong and is going to dump it all on the open market one day. It's really tough to say. Long-term flows, it has this unique narrative as the only real proof of work asset left. I think proof of stake is superior to proof of work in a lot of ways, but there are arguments to be made for both sides, and there are a lot of proof of stake chains. So even if you say like proof of work deserves to be 20% of market cap and proof of stake deserves to be 80, there's far more competition on that could very well mean that like Bitcoin dominance is 20 and ETH dominance is 10. So if you're looking at consensus mechanisms alone, so I think there is that just allure of simplicity. Notice that I have a tendency to think too far into the future, like this will collapse in 20 years, therefore it's a bad investment now. And it's actually not true. It means it's a bad investment in year 19, not in year two. So yeah, it's got a really interesting simplistic narrative. I do think that the Bitcoin paired with gold and ETH paired with NASDAQ tech makes a lot of sense, just by virtue of how value accrual goes. People don't expect stuff from gold. They do expect stuff from tech, and that mirrors how people treat their respective chains.
Can I get into that a little bit more? So like, How do you think Bitcoin fails in 20 years? Are you of the view that like the security gradually goes down as the block rewards go down, and then that causes like 51% attacks, or do you think it goes down in a different way? And maybe also, do you ever think about ETH like that? Like, what could be the thing that brings down ETH in 20, 30 years? Would you do you feel confident that that's going to be fine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Bitcoin failure case is a little easier to describe in detail because there's one clear way. The Ethereum failure case is more nuanced, possibly more likely. The Bitcoin security budget question is basically why. I mean, if you take it back to first principles, why does Bitcoin work? It works because there are miners. Why are there miners? Because they get paid. Because they get paid to mine blocks. And so what's the cost of doing a double spend versus the profit of doing double spend? If I were to like estimate those numbers today, then you'd probably profit, I don't know, high nine figures, low 10 figures from a double spend that's very, very carefully planned. That might be too high. But cost to attack the network is not actually buying up all the ASICs in the world. It's bribing all the ASIC miners in the world to do a reorg for you. And that actually reduces Bitcoin security by probably 100x because you don't need to, you don't need to actually acquire their hardware. You just need to convince them. And as tech advances faster, that means that new chips outpace old chips. So it doesn't matter if there are a bunch of people out living in the woods with their 2019 ASICs, because those are slower and slower than modern ones you get from a Taiwanese fab. So, I mean, failure case for Bitcoin is that block rewards drop on schedule and transaction fees are just a vanishingly small percentage of the value being secured and passed around. So that's, I mean, even 20 years, probably not a gigantic issue. But it's more of when does this become common knowledge? And also, what does it look like to control the computer chip supply lines? Is not investigated as closely as it should. Really, all you have to do is grab Taiwan, look for power hotspots, and if something hasn't hit nation state level adoption yet, then it's very hard for sovereign individuals to fight back against that. The Ethereum failure case is more likely, I'd say, capture of stakers, capture of coins. Everybody gives their ETH to liquid staking derivatives, and then those liquid staking derivative operators like refuse to give the coins back and also start engaging in censoring or whatnot, which is very, very possible. We haven't quite seen it today yet. Lido operators seem to be well behaved. Same with Rocket Pool, but it's not designed to let people, unlike a distributed proof of stake system like Cardano, Solana, pretty much every other POS system has, lets you claw back your coins if you don't like what the validator is doing. Ethereum doesn't have that. So if you give your coins to somebody, then it's completely up to them whether they choose to give it back. This was designed to incentivize people to not give their coins away, but that doesn't seem to have been strong enough than the desire to just get passive yield by letting somebody else do the work. So yeah, failure case there is A becomes a dominant smart contract platform, but gets captured by stakers. And then the alternate failure path is just, it's too expensive, too slow, better tech surpasses it, and people like falls into irrelevance because it doesn't have the meme of being the first, but it's also not the fastest and the cheapest.
Yeah, that second way is the way I'm kind of even more interested in, because I agree with you, like with things like Lido, you could potentially have situations where, you know, a lot of the actual ETH is centralized and that could lead to attacks. But that's the one that kind of gets me, is that like in a world where you feel like you're at the cutting edge, you're kind of hoping that everything slows down and that you're the one that you've chosen is going to be relevant for the next like 50 years. And you almost become, and this you kind of see with Bitcoin as well, like the Bitcoin Maxi movement, is that you become very aggressive towards new forms of technology, which is just like kind of ironic.
Yeah, and that's, it's ironic. What crypto does extremely well is disruption. That's the purpose of the entire industry, is like disrupting traditional finance, for example. And then what does Ethereum do? It disrupts Bitcoin. What does Solana do? It disrupts Ethereum. So it is extremely ironic to me that people come into the space known for disruption and then think they can buy one thing and hold it forever and have it never be disrupted. Like we want disruption against everyone who came before us, but no one who comes after is allowed to disrupt. They just have to buy my bags. And empirically, time and time again, crypto users have just shown complete unwillingness to cave to the rent seeking. People are like, okay, I just won't buy Bitcoin. Like you, all the Dogecoin holders are rich. Well, I just won't buy Dogecoin. Like I'll buy Shiba Inu. Oh, the Shiba Inu holders are now rich. Okay, I'll buy Pepe Coin. So you and same thing with NFTs. People are far more willing to buy the shiny fresh new chart that doesn't have a lot of people waiting to dump on them than they are to go PvP in the free markets. So yeah, it's just very hard to find stable long-term investments in a space predicated on building something better and disrupting those. Crypto is not very good at, it's very good at mimetic value, but not value extraction.
So you're probably the perfect guest to ask about this sort of stuff, because you did just say that perhaps the majority of LARPing has been in the AI meets crypto space. What do you see as the future of those two spaces? And how they could be intertwined. I know there's been some talk about autonomous economic agents. There's talk about, you know, just being the rails with which AI can do a lot of things quicker, and the data storage as well is more easy for them to read. So, like, yeah, how do you see the future of those two developing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. So, a couple, like, to lay the stage. What AI does very well is give it an enormous amount of data and finding patterns in overwhelming noise. But this has a limitation on needing extreme amounts of data. So like ChatGPT, for example, GPT-4, they've scraped the entire internet. Like every piece of text that's out there, they've got it and it's already in the corpus. And that corpus is, I'm going to screw up the size, but at least several petabytes, I believe. So it's kind of wild to think that all the data that's out there, we've gathered and stuck it into a database and trained on it. So the next advance is, once you've run out of just grabbing all the data there is, the next advances have to come from interactive environments. You can't just be passively reading websites. You need to be playing a game of some sort, or taking actions, seeing what happens, and learning from that. So, great example is chess. We've got the best player in the world, Magnus Carlsen, has a rating of 2800, and the best computers are 3600. So, you can't really become superhuman by training on just human games, because humans make the same mistakes and the computer will just learn to emulate those. So for a while they tried to, like in the early 80s and 90s, they tried to make chess really good by training it on human games, and that got it to human level performance. But then they just had it go off on self-play. They said, here's computer A, here's computer B, play 10,000 games against each other and I'll come back for dinner. And they started improving far more rapidly when they were just given this open, unstructured environment to participate in. So I think that we're also seeing that with chatbots. And what crypto offers is the largest unstructured environment Or the largest structured but open environment in the world. Like you can't go build a Boston Dynamics robot and tell it to walk around New York and learn something. It'll get mugged. It'll get stripped for parts before it gets anywhere. Or it'll trip over a dumpster. But you can kind of set agents to interact within blockchains. And so I think the blockchains become the great training ground for a wide variety of autonomous agents on that front. And then so that's what crypto has to offer AI is the largest structured but open world that it can play in and learn from. And then for what AI can offer crypto is extremely good at establishing provenance. NFTs are a good example of this, that this message was signed by this private key, this person, at this time. And it's really the only way to establish reputation. Cryptographic signatures, when everything can be spoofed, when you have deep fake articles, deep fake videos. The only way to know that something really came from someone in a global world is if they've signed it with their private key. So I think that NFTs, for all their simplicity, are a great example of this, that you know it came from this artist because they signed a message with this address. And so that's going to apply to a lot more, probably across news, across reporting, across, yeah. In investing, really, anytime you want to verify that something did come from someone.
I mean, I think this is a perfect segue into the Ledger fiasco and how they're treating the private keys. You had some comments on that. I mean, like, would you use the Ledger now or strictly Trezor? What would you recommend? I mean, yeah, what happened there? Can you give a broad overview for anyone who hasn't seen your post?
Yeah, so yesterday or 2 days ago, Ledger announced a new service called Recover that basically lets, if you upgrade your device firmware and then opt in, they set up a social recovery multi-sig for you essentially. Well, not quite social recovery, more institutional recovery. They'll split your key into a two or three, you can think of it as a multi-sig. And then send that among various institutional custodians. And then if you ever lose your ledger, get stolen, house floods, fire, catches on fire, then you can just reach out to them and they'll give you your private key back and you can not lose your assets, which is probably the largest barrier to most people using a hardware wallet today, to be fair. Very few people are currently subject to robbery and muggings and whatnot. They just have they stick it in the Cheetos tin, and then one day they throw out the Cheetos tin, and that's it. But the issue there that a lot of people had a problem with was they thought that Ledger was a cold wallet that never connected directly to the internet, and then it turned out that with this remote update, Ledger could just activate on your device and send out private keys to who knows where. And this freaked a lot of people out because it meant that their ledger was a was really a hot wallet this entire time. And there'd been a lot of misleading marketing, people saying previously your keys will never leave your device and so on. So yeah, raises an interesting question about what is the purpose of a hardware wallet? The for a lot of I mean for a company, the goal is growth at all costs. How do you increase subscription revenue? How do you sell new services? How do you expand? How do you get that next 10x? But they ended up semi, I mean, bricking is a strong word, but they ended up betraying the trust of everybody who had used it prior to expand it to a new customer segment, the non-power user, the more normie, give grandma a hardware wallet. But they didn't do it as a separate product line. They just significantly changed the features, or at least changed the perceived features of what the by turning the cold wallet into a hot wallet. So yeah, I'll pause there.
So what do you use? You a multi-sig guy?
Pick the first 12 words in the dictionary and type those in until I got eligible ones. Or you can, alternately, you can store your seed phrase one word per tweet. This is why I delete my tweets, so nobody can hack me. No, there are a couple of good options out there. None are really perfect, but the best you can do is who's screwed up the least historically in this space. And so both Trezor and Grid Plus have been good on that front. Trezor, I think that the hardware wallet having its own screen is an important bit of it, because if it doesn't, then you don't actually know what you're signing. So Trezor has a small screen that you can, it's kind of hard to view, but you can view transaction data. And then Grid Plus is almost like a mini computer, kind of looks like one of those early 2000 office phones, with a screen where the phone would be. So both of those seem like decent options based on your setup. But really, on-chain multi-sig protection is probably best of all. You can do that, gives you redundancy against failure in any one device. So you can set up like a 2 of 3 multi-sig with a MetaMask hot wallet and a small hardware wallet and then a Grid Plus or something like that, or even just, I mean, three separate hot wallets, three separate hardware wallets. These give you, just makes it very unlikely that people will know which one corresponds to what. And that's what I'm trying to support with Indelegate as well, is multi-sig software protection is ultimately better than fancy hardware. Hardware only gets you so far.
So maybe we should get into that a little bit as well. Like, you are a builder in this space. Maybe we can go into what you've helped build in the past and then what you're now building with Delegate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in the past, I mean, contributor to several DeFi projects, did some consulting work on the Sushi side long time ago, helped design multi-chain strategy for Alchemix. And now very highly focused on Delegate, which is basically a tool that makes it safe and easy to interact on chain again. It feels like there are two major crypto user personas. You have, to be crude, you have dumb retail who just makes a lot of money and loses it all on a phishing site one day. And then you have the more sophisticated individuals, institutions who know how to safeguard themselves, but because everything's so dangerous, they end up interacting with nothing. It's like not claiming airdrops, not doing governance votes, not trying out on-chain gaming. And I think this is pretty unhealthy for the space, to be honest, because it means that people come up with clever advanced stuff, but the sophisticated people smart enough to understand it rightly don't trust. They say the risk reward isn't worth it. Why would I put $1 million at risk to like arb out a couple of grand or something like that? And so you end up with not enough iteration, not enough feedback loops there. So Delegate's basically a trustless way to link wallets on chain and give access control or crypto native power of attorney to users. So you can have a vault that, say, holds your NFTs. Then you can have a hot wallet, doesn't have any assets in it, but it can still claim airdrops, do governance, join token gated discords, and so on. And that means if your hot wallet gets hacked, then it's no big deal. They can't actually access most of your valuable assets.
Huge for the Bored Ape community right
now. I know. We've Bored Ape thefts have gone down significantly since launch. I don't know if that's right. Our fault or just the people ran out. But
I'm a bit interested in like your strategy of accumulating wealth, is it you don't trade like short term, or are you like accumulating just like spot bags? Like, how do you go about like allocating your personal funds in this space?
Yeah, I'd say probably more medium and long term. Quite bullish on crypto, so I have the vast majority of my stuff here. And I just don't, I think it's far more satisfying to build things people use, and I also, I mean, selfishly think far more lucrative in the long run. So yeah, I'm mostly just like very long spot majors. And then try to, I don't know, I'll go through phases where I'm very active on chain. I spent the vast majority of 2021 accumulating way too many NFTs, and it's been a slow grind to get rid of them ever since. But there are, yeah, just still really exciting teams and projects that are. I think you dumped one of your elevated deconstructions on me one day, KBM.
Yeah, actually, I think I paid like top price for one of them too, so it
Yeah.
evens out. Dumped one, you paid top price. The average
Haven't
is still a
we
loss.
all? So, yeah, I think that ultimately, I'm not a, I don't know, this is maybe heresy to say with Rollbit right next to me, but I don't believe in technical analysis. And so I think that best bang for my buck or best bang for my time is just being very long crypto, both in stuff I can hold till it goes back up again, and then building new useful stuff for the space.
Oh no, is Fubar Al God? Is that what just happened? No,
He definitely has a
no.
Malady alt. Like, he
Yeah.
definitely has some alts going around.
I was so proud. Milady was the one NFT I sold the top on, and I was so proud of it because I sold like 2.5 and then went back down to 0.3. Like, I'm a genius. Finally, like the curse,
Isn't
the
it? It's at like
NFT
five
trading,
right now,
the
dude.
NFT trading curse is over. And you got Elon posting Milady picks, and it's at 7. Like, come on. So yeah, the Miladies, I thought I got them, but then they got me back in the long run.
So maybe we should talk a little bit about the future. I know obviously you're building Delegate. What are you most interested in the crypto space other than in Delegate? Like, what excites you about what's happening here? What you mentioned a few things that you think are respected teams in the NFT space or in the DeFi space. Yeah, what is the stuff that like you're spending your day researching?
I'm fascinated by there are two areas. One of them is decently consensus, and the other is hugely contrarian. I'm a huge bull on both gaming and governance. So gaming, everyone I think in theory is interested in. It's incredibly unclear who's going to win or how because of the multi-year development cycles of these teams, and that's just simply not enough to satiate the attention span of a bunch of 15-year-olds that we got here. But and you have people coming at it from two angles. You have Loot slash Wolf game crypto native. It's on chain, but so primitive it's barely fun. And then you have the other end where AAA game studio, they're going to make a CSGO skin NFT in 2027, and then they get boycotted for it. And I think that the right answer is probably not at either of these extremes, but somewhere in the middle. So I'm tracking and also working very closely with several top teams on the delegate front. We're going to be rolling out some exciting infra that supports this as a base layer, and ideally enables far more on the gaming front. So that one is less defined in terms of who and what time frame, but with how it captures the world's attention everywhere else seems inevitable. Then the other is actual governance. Most stuff is in a very shabby state today. We're relying on off-chain snapshot votes that aren't binding, can be ignored, as we've seen with Arbitrum. And in other cases, just aren't well defined. Like, you can set up what does it mean to make a snapshot vote and say devs should build V5. That's not even actionable. People couldn't follow it if they tried. So there aren't a ton of DAOs or projects that are actually on-chain token controlled. There are a couple. You've got Aave, you've got Compound, you've got Pseudoswap, and so on. I think that actual legitimate on-chain governance is going to explode 10x as soon as we get the right base primitives. And Delegate also enables people to do this far more safely. So excited to be the base infra on that side as well. But there's just simply too much risk, too many attack vectors to be left to, and not enough smart people willing to be on multi-sigs for the status quo to continue forever. So gaming and governance are two big areas I'm looking to shake up over the next couple of years.
Do you actually believe DAOs can work though? Do you believe that this form of, I don't know, political organization essentially, or voting organizations works long term?
I think generally, immutable primitives are better than decentralized governance. So people often look at decentralization as the end instead of the means. If there were a way to just have something work and require no oversight and no governance, then decentralization is actually worse than not having any at all. It's a bit of a tough thought experiment for people to work through because it's just so ingrained that like decentralization is good. And compared to centralization, it is. But like imagine a world where Bitcoin didn't need miners. You could just somehow teleport your transactions into the blockchain. They would be instantly finalized. It's like in the same way that you walk around in the park. It's just something that you do and it happens and it can't be rolled back. Then it would actually be worse. It would actually be worse to introduce middlemen to hold it up and potentially be corrupted. Now that's not the case. We don't have this magical system that works like that. So decentralized block producers are the best we have. But then within an app context, there are some things that you want to adjust and whatnot. Like it's good that Aave has governance parameters for that you can't get 90% borrow rate against your Luna anymore. That's healthy and necessary to adjust, but I think governance should be very clearly and closely defined in terms of on-chain powers and not just this free-for-all kumbaya.
I think that makes sense. Yeah, like I get what you're saying in that, like on the spectrum, one you kind of want it more than centralization. I just wonder if this is even still the final form of like how we
Yeah.
do governance. But
Well,
yeah, I see what you're saying.
I'd say that both, like Bitcoin is a DAO, for example. The rules are very clearly defined. Get hash power, you get votes on what the block producers are. You don't get a vote on changing the rules, or I guess hard fork scenario you do. But yeah, these are like the more tightly defined, the narrower the scope, the more likely it is to succeed.
All right. Well, let's maybe go into the final questions here. So, firstly, what is still driving you as a person? What's like your aims in this space? Like, where do you see yourself in like 5, 10 years in this space? Is there anything you're still trying to hit in terms of what you want to develop or like what you want to like leave behind in this space?
Yeah, I just find it incredibly satisfying to build stuff people use. And I've got probably 30 years of ideas, so we're not running out of those anytime soon. I'd like to build stuff that moves the space forward with the right ethos, but also is sustainable. Sustainability means it's so useful, people are willing to pay for it. So, Yeah, what drives me is it's just incredibly satisfying to build great products, I'd say. And I think there's a enjoy being able to combine a whole ensemble of complex information and distill it down to what matters and share that. I think that Twitter's been an amazing avenue for doing that.
The hour went super fast. I don't know if anyone else felt the same way, but now that we're close, we want to ask like the closing questions. Like Mando said, we always ask our guests, "What's the best advice not to get wrecked?" Do you have anything to share for that?
So I'd say avoid. I know. Yeah, avoid leverage and just pay attention to what you're signing. Or maybe the two that first piece of advice isn't well appreciated here. But really don't maybe don't sell yourself short. A lot of people will try to feed you a narrative that stuff is too complex or too hard for the average person. And so you need to use our service, use our product. That abstracts it all away from you while introducing new hidden risks. And I actually have a stronger view that most people are far more capable of getting and understanding things if it's presented properly, and not intentionally obscured. So I'd say just make an effort to understand. I mean, this is a gradual process, not a like a over several years, not a one day thing, but just try to understand what's actually going on with whatever you're doing. I mean, be it, and that gives a good foundation for being able to sense when something's off or might go wrong.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, Bubar, thanks for coming on, man.